Jan, thank you very much. Yesterday, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change published the third in a series of reports that represent scientists' agreed assessment of where the climate crisis is at and where it is headed. This latest report prescribes a radical reordering of the whole of society in order to keep the planet mostly livable. RTE journalist Philip Boucher-Hayes has read it and the other two reports, and he joins me now. Philip, good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
So listeners might be confused about the reason for the three reports, let alone what was said in them. Will you explain to us what we learned from the first two?
The way I remember the difference between these three reports is, well, quite crude, excuse me. One, what screwed the planet? Two is how screwed is the planet? And three now is how do we unscrew the planet? And you can really lump the first two reports together and distill it into a three-word message: adapt or die, which is pretty Darwinian, really. But what the reports, those two reports, set out is what's going to happen here by 2040 and then by 2100 if we stick with business as usual, how bad essentially it's going to be for 3.3 billion people who are directly in the firing line. 40% of the world's population going to be hit to a greater or lesser degree by 127 different climate change related weather impacts. It was what Antonio Guterres called an atlas of human suffering. But interestingly, and much more concretely for us here in somewhere that is not going to be immediately affected climatically in the same way the rest of the world is, these reports showed how, for places like Ireland, climate change is not just something that happens on the other side of the world. It is real and it is pressing here because everything is so interlinked in an era of globalisation.
Okay. And let's be specific then about what the report said about changes to our way of life here in Ireland, what those changes are going to be. Will you go through them for us, Philip?
I'll give you three of them in no particular order: food, migration and sea level rise. It would seem that the era of ever cheaper food is at an end now, according to the scientists. It's been getting cheaper and cheaper for 50 years. But from now on, there are going to be supply chain disruptions, increased demand, reduced supply, spiralling costs, not exclusively down to climate, but the unpredictable droughts, the floods all along our supply chain are going to be a very, very significant factor in that. And that
I was going to come to arresting the slide, and sorry to cut across you there, Philip, but this third report, what does it say about the latest thinking on what it will take to do that?
It is really quite a surprising document, Claire, because it is so revolutionary and it has been assented to by 195 different governments around the world. And it is doing nothing less than calling for a kind of a wholesale restructuring of society if you want to keep the planet livable, if you want to keep warming between 1.5 and 2 degrees. You are going to have to do nothing short, the scientists are saying, of restructuring the economy, government, society, the way that we do all of our business. And the scientists have gone further than they have ever before in providing a blueprint for the rest of this make or break decade. The report specifically says we need to reduce emissions by 43% by the end of this decade in order to have a shot at 1.5 degrees. But at present, emissions are going to increase by 14% by the end of this decade. If you want to have a shot at a world warmed by 2 degrees, which is still a pretty horrendous world to live in, emissions would need to reduce by 27% by the end of the decade. In fact, if we want to keep warming at 1.5 degrees, global emissions, and this is a really, really shocking finding from this report, global emissions are going to need to peak in 2025, 3 years from now, and then start coming down.
The percentage reductions, though, of emissions, they're a bit abstract. Do they translate it into concrete terms so we can see exactly what we have to do?
Yeah, they are a little bit abstract, but put another way, if you want to keep temperatures at or below 1.5 degrees, then in the next 30 years, we would have to reduce our coal consumption by 95%. Our oil consumption by 60%, our gas by 45%. if you wanted to keep warming to 2 degrees, it would still require really, really deep cuts. Coal, 85%, oil, 30%, gas, 15%. So, you know, put that into some kind of context that makes sense for us. In either scenario, 1.5 or 2 degrees, our electricity system is going to have to be run entirely on renewables, because the rest of the fossil fuel allowance is still going to be required in other places, like production of animal feedstocks and so on. So the next time you hear somebody boasting about the huge scale of Irish ambition and shooting for 80% of our electricity coming from renewables, you know now from this report that what the science is saying is nothing short of all of our electricity coming from renewables by 2050 is going to keep warming below 2 degrees.
It's an extraordinary shift to try and wind your head around, a complete overhaul of every aspect of how society works. Can you attempt to give us some sense of the scope of that, Philip?
I kept on catching my breath reading this whole thing, trying to get my head around exactly what they were saying, what this manifesto for change from the scientists is saying needs to happen. Because since 1850, our entire economies and all the wealth that we have generated have been based on carbon. And this report is now saying, look, to all intents and purposes, that has to end or start ending effective immediately. And we're going to have to reorder our economies around renewables or hydrogen or nuclear. They say in the report that the world's wealth has to be mobilised to achieve this. All of the pension and the hedge funds, the saved wealth that the world needs to spend on this effort. And they say that there is enough liquid wealth in the world right now to do what needs to be done, but that we need to increase the transfer of wealth to the global south by a factor of 3. Again, you know, this is an assessment that has been assented to by 195 governments. They're agreeing in principle, not if in practice. And one of the ones that really completely blew my mind was that in the discussion about how our built environment, how our cities were going to have to change really, really radically to allow people to live near their homes and so on, they said that cities are essentially going to have to become non-motorised. That again is 195 governments around the world assenting in principle, if not in practice, to the idea that the private motor car won't have a place in the cities of the future. There's so much in here. Everything we eat, the way what we wear is all going to have a low environmental impact. We're not going to be able to rely on concrete and steel in the future. At the face value, it is really, really quite unthinkable. It is a revolutionary document, this one, if indeed it's implemented.
Non-motorised, does that include the electric vehicles that everybody is looking up on the internet?
Yeah, it pretty much would. Okay. It pretty much
at least
privately owned ones anyway.
And these technologies I read about at the weekend, the machines that are supposed to suck carbon out of the air, will they be our salvation, Philip?
I'm going to sound a little bit like old Father Time here, because the first time that I reported on carbon capture and sequestration, there was a man called Pat Kenny, whatever happened to him, sitting in the chair where you should be sitting today. It was 20 years ago that I did a carbon capture report, and it is still now today what it was then 20 years ago, untested and unproven at scale. And this report says, I mean, this is really quite damning, that it faces technological, economic, institutional, ecological, environmental and socio-cultural barriers. Currently, global rates of CCS deployment are far below those in modelled pathways limiting global warming to 1.5 or 2 degrees centigrade. That is IPCC scientists speak for saying, look, all of the models that keep warming to 1.5 degrees are reliant upon this technology that has been around for decades but has never done its job in the way that it was designed to. And that they're going to have to suddenly pull it out of the bag and come good in the next 3 years or so. And that just doesn't seem to be a realistic proposition, is what the scientists are saying.
Right. So we have to do it the hard way. So let's talk about a country like Ireland. We know we're not quick about making decisions around building projects. How do we accomplish this in the timelines that they are demanding?
These are things that they don't explicitly address for Ireland, but you could infer that there are a number of things that flow from the urgent timelines that the scientists set out here. And one of them is that our planning system and our court system, which are so lumbering and cumbersome and slow when it comes to the building of infrastructure projects, are going to have to be completely overhauled. I'll give you one example. There is very, very shortly, Ireland's first solar plant in Ashford and Wicklow is about to be connected to the national grid. From the moment that the farmer on whose land it was built was first approached, that was 7 years ago, to it coming online now. The same project could be completed in the UK in less than half the time. So the good news on this front, I suppose, is that government has started transferring and recruiting people for the agencies where there are bottlenecks in this process, in On Board Planola, in SEAI, the EPA, indeed within the department itself. But they have a problem. They have a problem finding the suitably qualified people. So I don't expect us to be revolutionising this particular system anytime soon.
The fate of this report, it cannot be left, can it, to gather dust somewhere. It has to be translated into policy and political action, Philip.
Let's be optimistic about it, because when you sit down and you read it, it is a document that deserves optimism. And I'm putting it into the context of, in 2015 in Paris, the world's leaders said, look, we should try and keep warming close to 1.5 degrees as possible. It was non-binding, it was woolly, it was aspirational. But what happened to that was it became a clarion call for young people, for activists, for the school strike movement. And the political culture changed in the course of the last 7 years. And now no politician with a half a brain cell would do anything other than echo that ambition of keeping 1.5 alive. But that was an incoherent aspiration. What this document does, what the scientists are doing now, is saying, OK, if you're serious about landing this whole thing between 1.5 and 2 degrees, here is exactly what you have to do. So this report, it joins a circle between political aspiration, then public demand, and now you have a blueprint or a manifesto for how to do it. And this, I think, will become the yardstick against which every climate action, every policy decision is going to end up being measured in the course of the rest of this absolutely critical decade.
Philip, thank you very much. Good to talk to you. Philip Boucher-Hayes there. Next up, the complicated relationship between a father and son teased out over pints in County Monaghan. Author Damien Owens on his new book. That's after the break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.